This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one-man band. I'm their number one fan. Me and my 88. Me and my 88 friends.
Hello and welcome to this 83rd episode of Me and My 88 Friends. We're going to be doing something a little different today than normal. This is the first time in 83 episodes that Lawrence has had a guest host. That's going to be me. My name is Mike Dalka, and I first met Lawrence in 2020 when he and his friend Ray Renner met at the World Renewal headquarters in Greenfield, Indiana to discuss the 50th anniversary of the Asbury Revival. And basically, they got together with Gary Wright, the president of World Renewal, and decided that they wanted to pray for revival. I was there at that time to record some of the things that were going on. Gary asked Lawrence if he would be interested in producing a radio program for the streaming radio station, WRGR.live, that World Renewal operated until very recently. Lawrence agreed, and he and I began working together to get the shows on the air. Lawrence has his friend Buddy Miles do a lot of the engineering and production work on the show. And together they put together a show that, well, like I said, we're on episode 83 of now. And after 83 episodes, they kind of needed a break. So I asked Lawrence if it would be okay for me to do his 4th of July holiday show, and he graciously gave me his platform and let me run with it. So I'm going to do the best that I can, and we're going to play some of Lawrence's music and some of his old interviews, and I'll offer a few of my insights along the way. When I think about all the blessings that I receive as a result of knowing Jesus Christ, things like salvation and peace come first, of course. But the fact that I've even met Lawrence is also because I know Jesus. I wouldn't know Lawrence if I didn't know Jesus. And so the first song that I'm going to play is If I Didn't Know Jesus, sort of as a tribute to how I met Lawrence.
Thank you.
songs there'd be hell to pay. Ooh, if I didn't know Jesus.
That was If I Didn't Know Jesus by Lawrence Tuning. I want to remind all the listeners that you can go to lawrencetuning.com and listen to all the episodes and also purchase music from Lawrence if you'd like to support his music ministry. Lawrence does not typically mention this on the show because for him this show is more about just getting his message out there than it is trying to monetize it, as we say. So as I mentioned earlier, this is the 4th of July holiday edition of Me and My 88 Friends. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about today on the show was some of the things that make America great. Now, in this day and age, people often jump up when you say that and say, well, we're not a perfect country. And please keep in mind, that's not what I said. I think it's a great country. I think there are great opportunities here. For instance, the fact that we're able to do this show. We can discuss our faith, our religion, or even our absence of religion, our lack of religion, freely in this country. We're not compelled to worship in a certain way, and we're not compelled to worship at all. That freedom is freedom that was originally given to us by our Creator God, and it's recognized in the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence of the United States. And while we have not always held fast to those noble ideas, the fact of the matter is there's never been a better try in human history to duplicate in a form of government the liberty that we were given in Jesus Christ. And on that note, the next song I'm going to play is Trying to Obey the Call. It's about Lawrence's early days in ministry, not being sure exactly what to do, but going out and doing his best to do it anyway.
When I was 18 years old, I moved to Indiana to go to college. That was quite a culture shock to move from the cotton fields of South Carolina to Indiana. But I loved my time in Indiana, and in my junior year of college, Gary Wright came with a team of students from Asbury College in Kentucky and shared about a powerful revival, an awakening that had happened on their campus. And to make a long story a little bit shorter, which we will make longer later on, we had a tremendous awakening in our city of Anderson. This was in February 1970, which ended up having three services a day for 50 days. My life was totally revolutionized by that. Even though I was following the Lord, I was already a follower of Jesus. I had an experience of just a total commitment to do His will from that revival. Over a period of time, a team was formed to go out and into the streets and wherever the doors would open to tell people about the Lord. It eventually became a music group called The Fishermen, and I started writing songs, and we started singing my songs and other songs. And we couldn't afford a big silver bus, but we could afford a 1959 hearse. And so I wrote this song. I want to play it from my latest recording. About that experience. It just kind of tells the story of the early days. It's called Trying to Obey the Call.
Let's go back to where it all began. Me and my friends back in Indiana form a three-piece band, bass, drums, and piano, that's all. We didn't sound half bad, we didn't sound red hot, but we prayed real hard and we practiced a lot. We were singing for Jesus, trying to obey the call. We traveled all around for better or worse, in an
us hippies in the streets. Some people called us the Jesus freaks, and I have to admit we were caught up in it all. The songs got better and our hair grew long, and the Jesus movement kept coming on strong. And all the while we were trying to obey it all. We would ride into town in the afternoon, set up the equipment and get in tune. Then we'd gather in a circle and pray for the fire to fall. Pray to Jesus, help us tonight as we sing these songs with all our might. If we reach one person, Lord, it's worth it all. Many years ago, and they still don't play me on the radio, and the crowds I draw run medium or small. But I got no regrets for the life I chose. I'm a happy man and I hope it shows. Been a great ride trying to obey the call. It's a good life trying to obey the call.
Some money, needing a friend. I was feeling sad and lonely as I stood beside the road, when a bald-headed man in a pickup truck, he picked me up and he took me home. There goes a real Christian man. There goes a real Christian man. Well, I spotted a little New Testament laying on the dash by the radio, and I hadn't bathed in 5 or 6 days. I was hungry, tired, and cold, and I thought this man was kind of different. He picked a tramp right off the street. Then he said, my name is Billy, let me fix you something to eat. When we get home, there goes a real Christian man. There goes a real Christian man. Well, he told me Jesus loved me, how the Lord had changed his life. As we walked into the kitchen, he introduced me to his wife. He said, as long as you're in these parts, you'll always have a bed. Oh, I knew I'd met a Christian by the things he did and said. There goes a real Christian man. There goes a real Christian man. He's got a Bible in his hand, got love and he understands. There goes a real. Well, I stayed in town about a week.
and I never got saved till 2 years later in a park in Buffalo. Well, I seen a lot of phonies, a lot of hypocrites telling lies, but I know I've seen one Christian. Billy, I'll love you till I die. Oh, there goes a real Christian man.
There we go, there we go.
There goes a real Christian man.
I've had many people ask me if that song is autobiographical. No, I never hitchhiked in Nebraska. For many years, I just told people it was a fictitious story that came to my mind to prove the point of the importance of loving your neighbor as yourself. But in the last year, my memory has been jogged, as they say, as I began to think back on some of the early days in ministry. I lived in Indiana for 10 years, then I moved to Massachusetts for 16 years, and I moved back to South Carolina in 1994, where I continue to live now in Florence, South Carolina. But when I lived in Indiana, we had a music group. It was actually started out as a witness team, and as I began to write more and more songs, it evolved into a music group. One of the members of the witness team, who was actually the brother of my bass player and drummer, his name was Wayne Simstrott. Wayne ran a Christian bookstore in Anderson for many years. Well, Wayne, I believe he was in the Indianapolis area, and he saw a dirty, bedraggled, disheveled young man. I believe he might have just been walking down the street, or he might have been hanging around a gas station. And Wayne's heart went out to this guy. He was about our age. Turns out this was a guy named Jim from Belfast, Northern Ireland, who was down on his luck. He had bought a motorcycle, and his dream was to just bike all around America and see the country. Well, he got a bad taste of the United States when he went into a restroom at a gas station and came out, and someone had stolen his bike with his suitcase tied there, and so his money was gone. He was literally on the street with nothing. And Wayne saw him. He was dirty and he just looked hungry. And so Wayne asked Jim if he would like to come to our house and just get a good meal and shower and hang out. And so he did. He brought this man to our house. This man was not a Christian. And he ended up staying with us for 10 days. And he went to all of the meetings. He went to our concerts. We would have these debates and discussions. He was not ready to embrace a personal walk with the Lord, but he was deeply touched by the love that everyone showed him. I remember when he finally decided he needed to leave Indiana and he wanted to go up to Toronto, Canada. He had some relatives there, and from there he would figure out how to get back to Northern Ireland. And I remember everybody took up an offer, and we bought him a suitcase and gave him money. And he wept as he got on that bus to go up to Canada. I've thought about him over the intervening years. He would be in his 70s now if he's still alive. And my hope has always been that he will look back on those people who loved him, and the love will bring him into a relationship with Jesus. There's a verse in Romans that says, "The kindness of God leads you to repentance." It's not always the wrath of God. It's not always these fire-breathing sermons, although that sometimes that will do the job too. But many times It's simply the realization of God's kindness and his love that reels us in to want to follow him and want to serve him. The power of love is huge.
And that was Lawrence Tuning talking about the song we just played. The song was There Goes a Real Christian Man, and that's available on the album Kalamazoo or Beyond the Blue. If you're interested in that album, you can download it from iTunes. You can also download it from lawrencetuning.com. It's available either as the album or just individual songs on the website and iTunes as well. And if you would prefer a CD, you can go to Lawrence's website, lawrencetuning.com, and there's a way to order a CD there as well. Well, Lawrence finished up talking about that song by talking about the power of love. You know, one of the things that we unfortunately have not been doing well in the United States as a people lately is demonstrating love towards those we disagree with. I want to encourage you to take a minute right now and throughout the day, every day, to pray for our leaders. Also pray for your neighbors. Pray especially for those you disagree with. You know, Americans are known for being somewhat over the top. We're kind of an all-or-nothing people. This next song isn't necessarily about that, but it's in the theme of what I'm just talking about. It's called All or Nothing.
Play another couple of songs on today's broadcast, and this next song is a song I recorded in my most recent CD, which is called Living in the Shadow. The name of the song is called U.S. Americans. It's a song about America, of course. You know, why would you name a song U.S. Americans if it wasn't about America? I actually wrote this song in about 1978 or 9. I played it to the great producer Gary S. Paxton. He liked the song, but it wasn't quite finished. And so it never did get finished for many, many years. Mark Twain said one time that you can't force create a creativity to happen. He reached a wall when he wrote Huckleberry Finn, and he said, you can't make it happen. You just sit it aside and wait till it, inspiration comes back. Well, inspiration didn't come back from between 1978 and 2018. So how many years is that? 40 maybe. I'm not sure. I've never been good at math. But anyway, I wrote this song, and the point of this is not a political song, by the way. It has nothing to do with our recent election. But the point of the song is there's something more important than political power, and that is we need a revival. We need a return to following Jesus. And the point of the song is if we get to the point where we don't need God, then the best years are over. This has a Latin feel to it. It's called U.S. Americans.
Top of the pile. We're Americans. We've been number one since before we can even recall. The richest, the strongest in the history of the world. The wonder of them all. And I'm glad to be an American. I wouldn't want to be from anywhere else. But if we get to the point where we don't need God, years are in the past for us, America. We're Americans. We love our fun in the sun. We spend our money long before we get paid. We're Americans. We love football and guns and 4th of July parade. We're Americans. We're starting to drift. The mood is beginning to shift. We're moving away from an earlier faith and closer to the edge of the cliff. Oh, I'm glad to be an American. I wouldn't want to be from anywhere else. But if we get to the point where we don't need God, the best years are in the past. For us America. I'm not trying to be popular. That option already came and went. So I'll just say it and let the chips fall where they may. I think it's time for us all to repent. God makes it plain, he makes it clear as day. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray. If they'll learn from their past mistakes and follow me again. If they'll turn from their wicked ways, I'll come and heal the land. Oh, I'm glad to be an American. I wouldn't want to be from anywhere else. And if we turn back to God, I do believe the best years are still ahead for us Americans.
Us American.
Us American.
Us American.
U.S. America.
Us American.
U.S. America.
Thank you.
Well, speaking of U.S. Americans, I want to read for just a minute from the Declaration of Independence, something that I'm sure you've heard before. It says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, but they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights." Now, unfortunately, as it's also well known in our Constitution, we did not hold fast to that ideal that all men are created equal. In fact, the Constitution originally said that some men were 3/5 of a man, and that's not right. But it's important, I think, to also remember that not everyone in the United States agreed with slavery. In fact, the Civil War was fought largely over slavery, and it's one of the few times in human history that men have laid down their lives for people that were not even their own family or countrymen. There is a certain duality to America. We have committed great wrongs, and we have also committed great acts to try to right them. With freedom comes responsibility. We have the responsibility to use this freedom properly, and we've not always done well at living up to that expectation. But our representative form of government allows us to try to do better every time we have an election. It allows us to tell our representatives what we believe is right, how we want the country to be run, and it allows us to continually improve on what we're doing. In Psalm 127:1, it says, "Unless the Lord build the house, they labor in vain who built it." I think that we would have been laboring in vain to try to build this nation if God was not a part of it. So now we're going to hear a song from Lawrence entitled, "Unless the Lord Build the House." You know, the United States is a great melting pot, and we've got different cultures around different parts of the country. If you travel from the coast of California to the coast of New York City, you're going to encounter such a diversity of different cultures and different people, different accents, that it's going to feel like you just traveled across many different countries. That's one of the things that I love about America is that we have so much to experience. We have so many different types of climates. We have so many different kinds of people. We have so many different cultures. And it's all borrowed from other people, because very few of us can say that we are truly Native Americans. We may have been born here, but our ancestors came here. And all of our ancestors brought with them the things that they loved about their home. And America has been a great nation in large part because of that diversity, because we have taken the best things that were brought from many different cultures and incorporated them into our culture. And so in many ways, American culture is a sampling of the best the world has to offer. One of the truly distinct and unique cultures that exists in the United States is Southern culture. The Southern accent and the Southern way of living is something that is uniquely American. And Buddy Miles, the engineer for Me and My 88 Friends, is a true Southerner. I think you can hear it in his voice, and you can hear it in the name of his hometown. Lawrence interviewed him on episode 20 of Me and My 88 Friends, and I just loved that interview. I loved listening to Buddy's voice. I loved listening to his story. And I'm going to play that now just because I enjoyed it so much. I hope you enjoy it too.
This show is really a group effort, and I really, really lean on this person I'm going to talk to now, named Buddy Miles. Buddy, can you tell me your hometown's name?
Gladly, Lawrence. Matter of fact, my hometown was once featured on Hometown Salutes on Hee Haw.
Wow, Hee Haw.
Salute!
Tell them the name.
The small town of Hawkeye, South Carolina.
Hawkeye, that's H-O-G, Hawkeye. You have how many children?
Five.
Five biological children and one?
No, I have four sons.
Four sons.
Yeah, and one
foster daughter,
yep.
And I've seen you really pour your life into your kids, and it's just been a wonderful thing to watch. So any tips you have for any fathers out there, any brand new fathers, what have you learned? How have you learned to prioritize your life to include your kids? Because I know you include them in all sorts of things.
Well, that's an easy thing to answer. My dad, he always told me, I remember him making a statement to me growing up about how, you know, he could have had a job making X amount of money or whatever, but he always wanted to be available to us and a part of our lives. And that, when I became a father, just really became important to me. You know, I had a job, I was a banker, and I was on this career path, and then I had kids, and that became my focus. And so, you know, I try, you know, every day when I come home from work, first thing I do is I locate all of my children and say, hey, give them a hug. I mean, they're my world, you know, so to me, it's just natural. Like I don't have a problem. I look forward to it. You know, my youngest son stays under me all the time when I'm home, want me to play with him. And like, you know, I just eat it up. So
I read a thing one time, buddy, where the second president of the United States, John Adams, he kept a diary. And, of course, John Quincy Adams, who became the sixth president, was his son. And his son kept a diary, even when he was a little boy. And John Adams wrote in his diary, this is on the same day now, John Adams wrote, not a very productive day. Spent time with John, with Johnny. John Quincy Adams wrote, this was the most wonderful day of my life. Dad and I spent time together. Let's talk about your parents, your upbringing, buddy. Because I want to talk about how you came to the Lord. You came to the Lord as...
I was about 15 years old.
15? Yeah. I thought you came when you were like 5 years old.
No. Now, when I was five, because I did grow up in church, my grandmother used to love to tell stories about how I would get her little paperback Jimmy Swaggart Bible. She babysat me and a bunch of other kids in the community. And we would, I would gather the kids in her living room and preach to them. And she always got a kick out of that. You know, he's preaching the sermon that our preacher shared with us at church yesterday. And she would sing some songs. I'd call on her like she was in the choir, and she would sing songs, and all the little kids would sit there and listen to the message. And so, I knew about church. I grew up in it, but 15 is kind of where I credit that conversion experience in my life.
Now, buddy, you won't believe this. I don't want to make a big confession, but you know how I was traumatized by the story of a chicken when I was growing up, the chicken that pecked a cousin in the face because he went for the chick. So I don't want anything to do with chickens other than eating them. I don't want to hold them or anything. But I would actually, as a kid, would go and pretend I was a preacher to the chickens. I would stand there at a good safe distance, and I'd pretend I was preaching.
Well, you would have not liked my grandmother's house on my mom's side, because she had a rooster that would chase us every time we went in the yard. Yeah.
No, nothing to do with it, unless it's a Gamecock, a South Carolina Gamecock, which is the football team, which is not that good, really. But okay, 15 years old. You went to church all the time, though, right? 3 times a week?
Yeah, pretty much every time the door was open.
But you never really felt that pull of the Lord till you were 15?
Well, I always had, a desire from a young age. But I just never really, I feel like that's the point that I committed, my life to, where I wanted to live differently, do things differently. It kind of clicked at that moment, I guess.
Okay, what was it? We were at church?
Yeah, we were having, I don't remember if it was a revival or what, but I just remember there was some praying going on, I started playing guitar when I was 15, so I was playing at church, and I don't know, just kind of, I had this little experience. I got all excited on the inside, and I just remember standing there on the stage and just kind of praying, for God.
So, no, wait a minute. You didn't miss a beat when you're conversing? You just kept playing?
No, I just kept, I mean, I was playing
You didn't
the
kneel, you didn't say it? Just you said, kind of nodded your head, yes, Lord, and kept going?
Just like God come into my heart, and just I was in the middle of a song that I had to keep going. So,
do you remember what song it was?
I have no idea.
It's just an amazing thing to me how that happens. And I just about everybody I interview, I want to know, because there is always that moment. And I will talk about this after you sing your song, but I want to get back to this. That moment when what was once calloused is not calloused anymore, and you feel the drawing, that tender drawing. And with you, you had been in church all those years, and probably many people had come to the Lord over those years, but it never really touched you till that moment you were playing the guitar. And they let you play even though you weren't a born-again Christian yet. They said,
Right. Well, I came from the church I grew up in. It was one of those, Stevie and Uncle Johnny and whoever, you play guitar. There would be services sometimes where there was 6 guitars up on the stage and everybody's up there framing on a song, and it's, there would be times whenever I would show up to visit my parents at church after I got older, and people would be like, where's your guitar? I was like, I didn't bring it, because I knew y'all were going to have, plenty of music going on. So
now, you told me one time that your grandmother had a great influence on you.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. My dad's mom, lived right beside us my entire life growing up. And, she was the matriarch of our family. She had 35 great grandkids. We had a huge family, and she was very much our spiritual leader.
And didn't you tell me she gave you a guitar
Well, that was my grandmother on my mom's side. So she gave me, my aunt passed away when I was, I think the year I was born, and she played guitar. My grandmother had her guitar, it was like a 1971 Applause guitar. And she said if any, she was hanging on to it, and if anybody ever learned how to play, she was going to like pass it down to them. So like, it was my first guitar. And
wow, yeah. That's great. All right. Now, I'm going to have you sing a song that you wrote here in a minute. But be nice, though. What do you think the greatest challenge of doing this show has been? Trying to keep me corralled in the right direction. We know I have ADD, but the sad thing about it is I know you have it too. So how in the world will we ever get anything done?
Well, I think that helps me understand you. So you know, I kind of know what it takes to keep you on track, I guess.
That's true. People who have attention deficit, it doesn't make sense to anybody else, but we kind of know what...
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Okay, but buddy, you came to the Lord at 15 years old. Did you have struggles between then and now? Some people come to the Lord like at an early age, and they just don't grow. It's like they're frozen. In other words, they're 38 years old, but they're walking with the Lord. They've never grown. They're not walking with Him with an adult mind. You know, it's just... People used to say, I've been saved and sanctified and petrified. You just never grew. How has your journey been, your walk been since 15? Have there been key moments that have been turning points in your life?
Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, even though I had a relationship and I felt, you know, that my life had been changed, I struggled, you know. I was a teenager, so I had the pressures of high school and trying to fit in, and you know, I can remember just kind of, you know, not behaving the way I should or doing things I shouldn't have done or thinking things I shouldn't have done, and I would feel guilty and beat myself up over it. And I kind of always had this deal with God. I'd be like, "Oh man, Lord, I promise you, just let me like get out of high school, and I promise I'll get this right." You know, it was a difficult thing. There's a lot of pressure at that stage in your life. And I didn't always toe the line the way I should have. But I knew I was different. I knew that there was, you know, people would sometimes identify that there was something different. Yeah. And I just, you know, it was kind of one of those things where I had, at that point too, I had a desire, that was kind of growing in my life to be involved in ministry. And, you know, I was planning, kind of like had a strong desire to go to Bible college. You know, the direction that I felt pointed. I ended up not going to Bible college. I went to, university here in Florence. And, I was involved all throughout my college career. I was involved in Baptist Collegiate Ministries. And so I think that kept me kind of out of a lot of things that I would have probably gotten involved with.
Right.
But, you know, that's kind of the thing. It's like I look back, here I am 40 years old now, and I look back over my life and I'm just like, I can see how even whenever I wasn't thinking how I should be thinking or doing how I should be doing, like God always kind of had the guardrails up on me, you know, and I've bounced off of them a few times.
Yeah.
But it's like I've never in my life have I ever struggled with like purpose, meaning, you know, like I know I have a purpose. I know I have a meaning, and I don't always understand it. Always don't know what it is, but I'm just one day at a time, you know.
Sweet Jesus, yeah. That's the song.
One
says.
Day at a time, sweet Jesus.
You never said what your challenge was here with me.
I only get one?
Yeah. Give me your top two or three.
I have a list.
I sure you do.
But the biggest challenge with Lawrence, y'all, is Lawrence is such a talented guy.
Thank you.
That he wants
Here comes the singer.
He wants everything to be perfect. And so sometimes we'll do a take and he wants to redo it. And I'm like, Lawrence, that was fine. Well, I didn't sound right. I sounded real country or like, or something like that. And we're just having to go back and like, we're, you know, sometimes 10 takes before we can get one sentence completed. And, but other than that, I mean, it's a breeze. You're organized and
you cracked the whip on me. Finally, last week, I said, we need to cut the aw out. I'm saying too many, and he finally said, you improve the way you speak. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not going to cut it out every time you say And
you take advantage.
I just said anyway.
You take advantage of the scissor tool on this program.
I do. Yeah. I do. I work him. Yeah. We have talked about that. We notice that as interviews go on, I get more excited and start talking faster. And I get more country as we go along. So I've been trying to really work on that. Buddy, you're a great guy. I love you. And I'm thankful that God brought you into my life, even if you do keep me humble. Now, you're going to sing us a song now.
Yeah.
You want to
yeah.
introduce it?
Yeah, sure. So this, you know, you and I have talked in the past about, I've always had a desire to kind of write songs, but I get frustrated at the process sometimes. But a few weeks ago, our pastor, during a time of worship, kind of stood up and he'll do this often, just kind of grab the mic and kind of start singing something from his heart. And he did this one Sunday a few weeks ago, and I took the video from our Facebook page and was just kind of went through and transcribed everything he said. And then I took those lines and kind of structured them into a song, and that's what this was born out of.
And what's the name of it?
It's called Rain Forevermore.
Rain Forevermore. This is the great, incomparable Buddy Miles.
We are here in your presence. We are ready to draw near. We come boldly to your throne. Lift up our voice. We declare. You are awesome and mighty. You are steadfast and true. So we've come here together, lifting a song of praise to you. Holy, holy, holy. Holy is our Lord. Holy, 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 you reign forevermore. You were, you are, and will be. We can never change your plan. Lift our voice to you, Lord, here in the place where we stand. Holy, holy, holy. Holy is our Lord. Holy, holy, holy. You reign forevermore. Holy, holy, holy. Holy is our Lord. Holy, holy, holy. You reign forevermore. You reign forevermore.
I'm talking to my engineer and co-producer, Buddy Miles. He's a guitar player. You just heard him sing, actually, a song he wrote. And, of course, I'm a piano player, Buddy. I wanted to be a guitar player. I tried very hard. Well, I didn't try that hard. I bought a $15 guitar at a pawn shop when I was 15. We started our guitar career at the same time. I ended up learning two songs. Detroit City. Last night I had a, you remember that old country song?
Yeah.
The Cotton Fields Back Home in honor of my father. And I think I learned All My Trials. That was an old folk song. But I never liked playing the guitar. I quit very early in the game. You know why I quit?
Well, you couldn't take the pain.
Yeah, well, that's right. I didn't want to stand up. I'm lazy. I like to sit down and play. But the girls always went for the guitar player, but even more than that, the drummer. The drummer. All the girls loved the drummer. But next to the drummer, the girls never went for the piano player. I mean, let's face it, they never went for the piano player. It was always, so I thought, well, I'd be cooler if I could play the guitar. But I told my friend, I said, I don't like playing the guitar. He said, why? I said, it hurts my fingers. The strings just cut into my fingers. And he said, oh, Lawrence, they tell me. Now, like, he was going to be a guitar player, too. We both flopped. But he said, they tell me if you keep doing it, you're going to develop calluses on your fingertips, and you won't feel it anymore. And that's true.
To an extent.
Okay.
When we come here on Sunday mornings and we run through our pre-service stuff and then we do the set list, my fingers are hurting by the time we get done.
Okay, you just ruined my story, buddy. You just ruined my point. I'm trying to get to a spiritual point. But a callus will grow. A callus is just a little growth, it grows over. And you can't feel things when you got a callus there. And the Bible talks about our hearts becoming calloused. The prophets would speak to the Israelites and say, your hearts have become callous. You've got calluses on your hearts. You can't feel God. You can't hear God. And that's the way we all are, unless by God's grace he begins to blow that wind of his spirit on us. You talked about that a few minutes ago, buddy, how you were in church all those years, but there came that moment when suddenly your heart was moved and you said yes to the Lord. That's our show for today. Hope you join us again next week, same time. God bless.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song.